Hi, I am Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversations podcast. Yes, I speak to celebrity CEOs and industry leaders, and yes, they do tell me the secrets to their success. And I help secure amazing guests on my show because I got relationships, including Tyler Perry, Stephen A. Smith, Lonnie Love, Cedric the Entertainer, Patti LaBelle, Nick Cannon, Angela Yee, and many more. This is Rashawn McDonald. Listen to Money Making Conversations on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Peace to the planet. I go by the name of Charlemagne the God. My mama calls me Lenard McKelvey. See, I thought I just had a face for radio, and some good white people at Comedy Central gave me a new TV show called The God's Honest Truth. Won't God do it? And you know they couldn't contain my blessed, black, and highly favored ass to just 30 minutes once a week. Nope, I'm delivering extended sermons straight into your ears like a dollar store Q-tip. Plus, the check already cleared so I can say whatever the hell I want. Like, cracker ass cracker. See? Listen to The God's Honest Truth on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are extremely cool and chill, if I do say so myself.
In our new podcast, How Did We Get Weird?, we'll talk about our favorite snacks, shows, and obsessions from growing up with some of your favorite comedians, musicians, and other A-list celebrities.
Sorry, we're major. Listen to How Did We Get Weird? Starting September 27th from Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network. Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
I mean, you've had quite the series of performers. I'm honored even to be on your podcast. The sample tape I get is Ralph Fiennes doing Chocolate Nemesis. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give up now, you know?
Never, 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 no. You're the best. Michael Caine was very, very sweet. He was, did I play you his?
One of my favorite restaurants in the world, or actually anywhere in the world, is the River Cafe. And they have a dessert, which is my favorite.
That is so good.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the recipe in case you want to make it for yourself.
Michael Caine is so ruby.
Yeah, this recipe is for 6 people.
Oh no, now you just played me Michael Caine. How am I supposed to? This is like, how the hell am I supposed to do this? This is...
But you got tomato sauce.
Maybe I should do an intro to it. Okay, I'll do this then. I'm Jake Gyllenhaal, and there is truly nothing like Ruthie's slow-cooked tomato sauce. So I'm going to do my best here to give you a recipe that will hopefully change your life and the life of many people that you love. So... here's slow-cooked tomato sauce, very fast. Heat 1 to 2 tablespoons of the olive oil in a large saucepan and fry the garlic until it is soft but not brown. Add the tomatoes with some sea salt and black pepper and cook fiercely, stirring constantly to prevent the tomatoes from sticking as they break up. As they cook, the tomatoes will release their juices. When this liquid has evaporated, add the remaining olive oil, the basil, or oregano, and more seasoning if necessary. Serve hot.
So, Jake, I think you were the first person that I called when I had the idea of doing a recipe, reading a recipe from the River Cafe cookbook. 25 years of cookbooks and 11 books and so many recipes that you could have chosen. You chose tomato sauce. I know why, but maybe you could tell everyone else why you chose tomato sauce.
Because I think simple is the most difficult. When you take just a few ingredients and you try and cook with them, what comes through is the person cooking them. Also, if you have the best ingredients, like the ones that you showed me how to make this tomato sauce with, or tomato sauce with, then you can't mess it up.
I remember there was a time when Ruby, my granddaughter, was I think about 7, and you made a little. She taught you how to make it, and if food is a connection, and it is a connection, then I think that probably this pasta makes us feel close. And
I always think of that moment whenever I'm taking the 2 knives and the colander, and I'm slicing the canned tomatoes. It almost was her favorite part when she was instructing me. Yeah. And I always think of that moment because it's essential to the recipe. It's really when you empty those tomatoes into the colander, and you have to slice them to get the first sort of first juices out of them. And then over time, as they saute, they really do turn into like a sugary glaze. And then how they stick onto that pasta is like nothing else.
Yeah. I was trying to think how we first met. And I think that I met your sister, Maggie, maybe before I met you. I can't remember. But I remember that you have a brother and a sister who love food. Were your parents obsessed with food? Did they make sure that you always ate? Did you have meals at the table? What was it? Was it growing up with food in your house?
I would say, rather honestly, that food was and meals were the only thing that really worked in my family. Mm. And by that, I mean the only thing really without a sort of drama or tumult, though it was full of wonderful drama and, you know, us being all sort of competitive and partial control freaks, you know, as it is in a kitchen, you know, there's a lot of nudging and bumping around and, you know, don't do it like this, like that. Mm. But the dinner table, and particularly the, I would say the market, which my parents, since I was a very young age, took us to, and, you know, that was an experience in itself. And I remember my mom, you know, holding my hand and taking me to the woman at the Hollywood Farmers Market where I grew up in Los Angeles. And she was the one who grew Japanese tomatoes and Japanese cucumbers. And we'd always get shiso. And then we'd move over to the lettuce that she loved and then citrus. And we were always tasting things. And in America in particular, that is not so common, you know, that experience. But so from there, from the market and buying it from local farmers and then knowing, you know, the beautiful thing you've bought and then cooking it in the kitchen, you know, that was the process. And then sitting down to the table, you know, that those were the things, you know, they were, my parents were always trying to tell stories of different kinds and really beautiful artists in their own ways. And then, you know, my sister and I were performing at a very young age. And I mean that also like as actors and then just generally in our personalities. But the thing that was pure, the thing that was clear, at least to me, was always the meal.
Was it your mother in the kitchen or your father? Did you have someone cook or did you?
Both. My mother was more of a salads, not much transference of heat. She was more of a kind of antipasti, cold kind of more person. Lettuces and salads were a specialty. And then my dad was more of a sort of burn it, roast it kind of guy. So he would always get lots of root vegetables and carrots and potatoes and rosemary, mushrooms. He was very close to the mushroom man at the market. I'd be very close to him. I always remember going to the mushroom man and getting all these sort of funky little mushrooms. And he would then roast them with olive oil and salt and, you know, different herbs and things. But they both cooked and they both loved food. And they always said to me, you know, if you and when you make your own money, you know, if you're going to spend money on anything, it should be a great meal. Yeah, it was good advice, but not great advice.
Hey everyone, it's Megan Trainor.
And I'm her big bro, Ryan.
And we're starting a podcast. It's called Working On It. And we're working on just bettering ourselves overall as human beings.
Listen, you're just going to get a behind the scenes look at our lives. We're just regular people.
Just regular people in Hollywood.
We're going for it.
Episodes drop every Wednesday. And we can't wait for you to listen. iHeartRadio is number one for podcasts. And it's easy to see why. Listen to Working On It on the iHeart app or
wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Soleimani Duena.
I'm Jacob Scott Thomas Bertrand, and this is the Lone Lobos podcast. Every week, we just shooting from the hip, talking about everything and nothing at the same time.
Including topics like what people think about Latinos who don't speak Spanish. Basically, what he said was, oh, you're a Mexican that doesn't speak Spanish. That's like a taco with no salsa, like a taco with no flavor.
Oh,
like,
dang. She took that and was like, this was a year ago, and I didn't get accepted. Through timestamps and everything, and the email of her not getting accepted, and then a year later, exact design was on, like, a Converse that you can buy.
Yeah.
And she was like, this is so messed up.
Because like, you can't do anything about it.
Well, yeah, but she put on, it blew up.
Right, exactly. It started off as like this posh, you know, online Soho.
Oh, it's for entrepreneurs.
It got to the point where I was like, what room are you in today? Like, what are you guys talking about? And he's like, this one is just a bunch of people making helicopter noises.
See, I was always way faster than my mom, so she would never be able to catch me.
Listen to Lone Lobos starting September 21st. It's a part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Maddie
and Kenzie Ziegler, and we have a podcast called Take 20.
This is so exciting.
I know, we've been wanting to do this for so long.
It's been a long time coming, but I feel like we're in a really good point in our lives where we have a lot to talk about.
I'm actually really happy that I grew up with you because I could not do it alone.
Oh my gosh, that got really emotional.
Well, it's true.
It took a while to get to this point.
We hated each other.
I know.
Like, I hated you so much.
I know. We used to tell each other that too, which is terrible.
Okay, but honestly, I don't think we hated each other that much because we would sleep in the same room.
Every night, even though we'd fight.
I'm so excited for everyone to get to know us on a personal level and not just through social media. So this is going to be really interesting and fun.
I know. I was literally saying today, I was like, I wonder if we're going to like fight.
I feel like there will be lots of laughs.
You know what's so bad? Once we start laughing,
we can't stop.
We can't stop.
Nope.
That's going to be a huge problem.
No.
But listen to Take 20 on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would probably say if you were to ask people closest to me, I'm not always the most fun to be with in the kitchen. Because I did have my stint in kitchens, you know, and I learned from professionals, and it's a very tough place, a kitchen. You know, it requires a particular type of focus and a sense of geography. You know, like knowing small spaces and moving hot things. And I think I might take it all a bit too seriously. It's a general note for myself. Okay. But I think that my sister likes it when I cook for her. My nieces like it when I cook for them. I love cooking for my nieces. I love asking them what it is that everything that they want. That to me is like, what is your favorite? What do you want me to? I'm coming over. I'm going to bring you anything that you want. We're going to cook it, you know, and just the satisfaction of that is there's nothing like that to me.
I always tell the people who work for me, just say yes, you know, somebody, and we can, and then we, at least you say yes, and then I'll say no. But I thought what was interesting is you said you just had a stint. When did you work in the kitchen? I should know that. What kitchens did you work in?
Well, I worked in a few restaurants as a busboy for a while. And then I went, and when I was about 16, 17, I started working as a sous chef, like prep chef, really, for Marco Canora. He runs Hearth and Brodo. He had a restaurant in Martha's Vineyard in Edgartown there. And I was, for a while, really a prep chef for him and did a buckets of lemon confit for months. That was quite a experience. And then I did my one of my oldest best friends from childhood cooked in New York for a number of years, and I actually at times would join him in the kitchen when they needed sort of extra hands here or there. They don't have any, you guys don't have any time. I you know, it's just all taken up. It's, you know, from 10 a.m. until midnight, you know, sometimes 2 in the morning, you're all working. And so it's hard to have a certain type of friendship except with days off. Yeah, so we would spend our time. Sometimes I'd just join the line. And that was more in college.
But it's interesting because you also, I always think that there is something, well, links between the theater, with the way you were just describing the geography of the kitchen. And I don't know what it's like to be on a stage, but there is very definitely a geography of the kitchen. And I remember we have an open kitchen, as you know, and when we opened the kitchen completely and there were no walls at all, Richard Eyre, director, came in and said, I said, isn't this theatrical, Richard? And he said, well, I've been watching you, and actually I think it's more like ballet, you know, because everybody's just moving. But I think that maybe the reason a lot of actors like to work in restaurants is there are parallels between theater and a restaurant. You know, everybody has to know their lines and everybody has to have made the sauce. And if the scenery has to be painted and the floor has to be washed, and the curtain goes up. The curtain goes up in a theater, and the curtain goes up in a restaurant.
I think you could ask a lot of actors. They would say a lot of times they started, you know, in a restaurant. But I do think that there is a theater to the restaurant. And I think what I love so much about the theater is going to the same place nightly, sometimes daily when you have a matinee. You know, if you have lunch service, it's the same thing as going to a matinee. You know, and I love the preparatory sort of experience before that.
Like in what way? I mean, the getting everything.
You know, you arrive, for me, what I love is you arrive at the front or the back of a theater. On Broadway in particular, you know, I love coming through the front of the house as I head into the back of that. Yeah. I do, because there's that feeling of the front of the house with all of the ushers and everybody who's preparing, you know, playbills or, you know, whatever the program is for the evening. And then, you know, if the theater has a bar, you know, there's they're prepping the drinks and making sure everything's in order and the cash register's in order. And, you know, there you're walking through people who may be picking up their tickets or ordering tickets first, you know. You get a sense of the majesty of what the audience walks through before they sit down, you know. And I think it gives me as a performer an appreciation for every single night, though for us it may feel sometimes monotonous and the same if you do 200, 250, 500 performances, that you honor the audience that arrives that night, that every audience is different. And you do feel that once you're on stage, that the energy from them is different. That some are a wild ride. You know, it is a wild ride. Some are very steady. Some are, and they have their own personalities. But it's something about walking through the front of the house to the back of the house. Oh man, that excitement!
I mean, we have the best jobs ever.
Oh my gosh, nothing like that feeling. And it is I am so grateful for it. And I feel at home. I think that's what you know home feels like.
Just describing that, I do very often before when we've all cleaned down and everything is ready and the, you know, you're on the pass and you have your sauces and you've read, done the menu with the team. I often go out the kitchen door down towards the river and I walk around and I come in the front door and I do that. You know, I just come in the front and thinking about just looking at the place and feeling where everybody's going to be in about 15 minutes time. And it's the same with the audience. I could, because we have an open kitchen, I can look out there and I could see somebody giving a taste of their food to their partner. And then you're looking at them to see whether they're liking it. You can tell, you know, or you see people having an intense conversation. And then just the noise, the way the noise builds up, it's quite quiet in the beginning. And then
you walk through those doors and of the River Cafe and you feel that type of magic. And I also think there's the process of going to a restaurant. You know, it's
what's
not
that?
Even just the restaurant itself. It's the making of a reservation to, in the case of your restaurant, months in advance.
Minutes in advance. Come on. Don't pretend like, months in advance. When did you ever book a table months in advance?
You gotta make friends, real friends. That idea of when you decide to make a commitment to an experience, you know, and the anticipation of that experience is part of the experience. And then, you know, I think that this very special thing about the River Cafe is that when you're there, your experience is never what you expect because, you know, in one way, the menu always changes. So you have your consistencies, you have your certain desserts that you know will always be there. You have certain pieces you know you can always ask or look towards. But then there's the unexpected. And I love that about the experience. And I do feel that way if you're going to compare theater to restaurants in theater. That's what I love about theater.
What's that? Know. Tell me about that. What's that? What do you mean, that unexpectedness?
Well, you bring your life with you to the theater every night, and your life obviously changes on a daily, hourly, minute by minute basis. And so all of the things that happen within your day, within your week, be they joyous, be they tragic, they come to with you to your work. And there's a way, what I'm grateful for is the ability to express those things through in a safe, sacred space, you know? And then also things that happened with the audience, you know? The last show that I did, you know, I was an open monologue with the audience. And so they really had the ability to, we at least sort of implied that they could speak to us, you know, in a way.
What was that like?
Magical and sometimes disturbing, you know? The piece that I did was a very emotional piece and about birth and death. And there was this really amazing moment that would happen if it happened every night where I would feel, as you're speaking to an audience, they would click in and then they would ride their own imagination. And all of the experiences they had in their own life with losing someone or with having a child or you know, all the things I was speaking about would begin to emerge. And then they would tell you where they wanted you to go.
Which monologue was that?
Monologue that we did called, there are two of them. One was called Seawall and the other one was called A Life. Yeah. And I did A Life and Tom Sturge, wonderful actor, Tom Sturge did Seawall. And we did them as an evening pretty much all of the year before this worldwide pandemic began. And we spent the year first at the Public Theater and then we moved it to Broadway. But in that space, that's what was, it was really, really incredible. You know, people weeping, sometimes people getting up and walking out, you know, and because you can see those things, because you were facing the audience, it was unlike any other experience I've ever had in my work.
It's interesting how when we opened the River Cafe after the first lockdown, people came and cried. You know, people were very emotional just being in a restaurant, being with people again. And if you ask waiters, it's interesting that they will tell you that people do cry in the restaurant, you know, that they're, as you're saying, what do you do in a restaurant? What do you do? Opening up. And it is quite emotional. And I think we really have missed that contact of people being together.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
You might know me from the 7 years I spent as a cast member on Saturday Night Live. And since then, I've gone on to star in some of your favorite TV shows and films. And trust me, they're your favorite.
Favorite?
Okay, Jonah, please be cool.
And I'm a longtime music journalist with a fairly niche but very dedicated audience in the punk scene.
So, Alt, in our new podcast, How Did We Get Weird? We'll talk about our favorite snacks, shows, and obsessions from growing up with some of our favorite friends, including comedians, musicians, and other A-list celebrities we want to brag that we're friends with.
Wow, Vanessa, you're friends with Minnie Driver?
Yeah, JK, but she is very cool.
We'll have fun and ultimately heartwarming discussions about our formative years and recall some unforgettable memories along the way.
Like the time the Jewish Federation called our house during dinner and our dad told them we had converted before hanging up on them.
Listen to How Did We Get Weird starting on September 27th from Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Jonah, that's your birthday, September 27th.
Yeah, that's my birthday. You gotta listen.
Hi, I am Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversations podcast. Yes, I speak to celebrity CEOs and industry leaders, and yes, they do tell me the secrets to their success. And I help secure amazing guests on my show because I got relationships, including Tyler Perry, Stephen A. Smith, Lonnie Love, Cedric the Entertainer, Patti LaBelle, Nick Cannon, Angela Yee, and many more. And my background is a 2-time Emmy Award-winning producer, sitcom writer, and stand-up comedian. So if you want to be successful in life, this is the podcast for you. Each week, I remind you to lead with your gifts in order to build your success story. And you never know, my next celebrity might be you. And those conversations will always be with CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers on this podcast. And the podcast name, Money Making Conversation. This is Rashawn McDonald. Listen to Money Making Conversation on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again.
So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be?
Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Someone who loves food so much, have you had to diet? I mean, have you had to lose weight for a part?
Yeah, I have. I have done that. And, you know, it depends. Sometimes I find that you're satisfied in different ways. You know, for instance, you know, if you have a goal for a movie and you know that that goal is going to be a part of telling the story, you know, you constantly have that to go back to.
Mm.
I did this film, Nightcrawler. I lost to, like, you know, close to 30 pounds or so. And in doing it, I supplemented certain things sometimes with running. You know, I'd run a lot. And then I learned different safer processes of eating and being able to to lose weight, like, you know, giving yourself proteins, and it's possible too. You know, I was kind of like, I was doing it safely, but, you know, I didn't really have all the knowledge. I've learned that over the years. Though I think more and more, for someone who loves food, you're taking not only the food out of your life, you're taking the experience of being with people, because, you know, you can go, and I would, times I would, when I was preparing for that film in particular, I would go to dinner with friends and I would, you know, drink a glass of water or something like that. Mm. But it, you realize that oftentimes you'd say you can't go to dinner. Mm. And you're missing out on that more than anything. What I realize is it's not just really the food, it's really the connection with the people that I'm missing out on. And it helped from the character at the time, because he was a very lonely man, and all those things I could use, knowing that I had a space to use them in. And if it's for something that, you know, you really do believe in, that it's for sort of the expression of something that I'm now very proud of, you know, that that was worthwhile. I think it becomes confusing when it's other things.
And then the last thing I just wanted to ask you is when, because for me, when I go to a city, I always head for the market. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I saw you and as you said you've been to Spain, I probably would have said, oh, you know, did you go to the Prado? Did you go, what did you eat? You know, we might say what we pretend we first ask what museums or what you did to, but really what we want to know is the story, because we love stories, don't we? We love a story. Right. And you might tell me how you found a restaurant in some dark alley, or you met somebody and they took you to a, you know, a place by the beach. Is your curiosity for restaurants wherever you are, or food wherever you are? Do you want to know the food?
The only thing that matters to me. It is the only thing that matters to me.
I love that, Jake.
I legitimately have no other interests. I'll be honest. When I think of going to a city, that's the first thing I always, and you know, as insufferable as my friends can say that I am, the one thing they cannot deny is that they will always go to a great meal with me in whatever city we're in.
That's so cool. That's good.
I mean, and it's also not like, I'm not that, like, I actually had a dream the other night about that, about just being in an unknown small town, sort of in the middle of nowhere, and going to the market. And
you went to the market in your dream.
In my dream. And when you said that, I was like, it made me think that's really where you learn the most about where you are.
No, it is. If you're in Venice, you go to the fish. If you're in a small town, you go to a little place and there might be only four little stalls.
In Venice, there's this incredible, I'm sure maybe you know that black radicchio tagliatelle that at the small restaurant.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm in Venice, I like, that's where I go. I've had a few films that have gotten into the Venice Film Festival, and as exciting as that is, it's not as exciting as knowing I'll be able to go get that pasta.
I know. I'm really here for it. There are many reasons you might think I'm here, but I'm really here.
Sadly, I've just admitted that my deepest truth. Yeah, that is it.
Well, that's not sad. It's good. All right.
It's not sad at all. You know, to me, with you, our connection, the fact that you are so endlessly supportive of your friends, and you are an open heart and have given me confidence to do things in my life and my work that I wouldn't normally have had. And
you're cooking.
Well, yes, but just the fact that you gave me slow-cooked tomato sauce as a recipe makes me want to strive for more. You know, you say, okay, you can have it, but you got to earn it now.
Love you. Mwah. Thank you, Jake.
To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi, I am Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversations podcast. Yes, I speak to celebrity CEOs and industry leaders, and yes, they do tell me the secrets to their success. And I help secure amazing guests on my show because I got relationships, including Tyler Perry, Stephen A. Smith, Lonnie Love, Cedric the Entertainer, Patti LaBelle, Nick Cannon, Angela Yee, and many more. This is Rashawn McDonald. Listen to Money Making Conversations on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Megan Trainor,
and I'm her big bro Ryan.
And we're starting a podcast. It's called Working On It, and we're working on just bettering ourselves overall as human beings.
Listen, you're just gonna get a behind the scenes look at our lives. We're just regular people.
Just regular people in Hollywood.
We're going for it.
Episodes drop every Wednesday, and we can't wait for you to listen. iHeartRadio is number one for podcasts, and it's easy to see why. Listen to Working On It on the iHeart app or
wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I am Sholo Maridueña.
And I'm Jacob Scott Thomas Bertrand, and this is the Lone Lobos Podcast.
Now, some of you guys might know us from the shows we've been on, i.e. Cobra Kai, some of the other ones. But September 21st, we're going to be launching our podcast together. And what are we going to be talking about, Jacob?
Unapologetic takes on adulthood, shooting every week, growing up in the industry.
Listen to Lone Lobos on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.